5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to HVAC Success Secrets Revealed, a show where we interview industry leaders and disruptors, revealing the success secrets to create and unleash the ultimate HVAC business. Now your hosts, Thaddeus and Evan.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of HVAC Success Secrets Revealed with Thaddeus and Evan, where we have good conversations with good people, and any good conversation worth having is worth having drunk. Cheers, hey. Beers. Yeah. We are live, still at Epic 2024, down in Disneyland in lovely Anaheim, California. And we have Jordan Bowman on with us here today. And Jordan, are you officially the general manager or working your way into the general manager role? Is it like...
In between.
Yeah, it's
this awkward in-between phase. But by the end of this month, it should be official.
All right, perfect. We'll just say the official general manager of the AC Guy of Tampa Bay. I've been 6 years in the business. You guys have been in business since 2005. You were in the business. You left the business. You came back to the business. I'm excited to dive in. And I remember asking you what your superpower was. And you said communication. And I think that's a big thing inside of a business to be able to master that. But let's walk backwards. Let's start with your journey into the trades and into your role.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. My dad started the company in 2009, as you have heard. He started it because he's experienced a lot of rough situations with outside companies, not treating their employees really well, but also not treating people well. Due to a really terrible situation of how he got let go of, he decided to start working on his contracting license and going into the business himself. So it's been around the family since I was like in middle school, high school. So I did touches of like stuff at that age. I was just a little kid, obviously, but we would like put out flyers and all that. So then once I graduated, that's when I officially went into the business at like 8. I was first a CSR, did that for a couple of years, and then I went to school for 2 years and then came back because of COVID. Mm. COVID messed up a lot of people's lives. It did mess up my plans. I wouldn't say it messed up my life by any means. I am way happy. But at the time, it felt like disorienting to come home, but it was good.
Do you think that if you would have still been in school, because you did the 2 years and then you didn't go back, do you think that you'd still be in the position you are now, or do you think you'd be working for somebody else?
Oh, if I was still at school, I'd be broke. That was one of the things. I would be broke. I was so poor in school. It was embarrassing. And what I was pursuing was like not something that was going to have a lot of money either. It was like, it was a good path. It was missions work, but I changed my opinion on how to do missions work. I prefer doing it in a more like financially stable situation. So I came home. Business contracting is super feasible and stable so long as you do it well. And I feel very good with that. I'm a lot more financially stable than I probably would have been.
Both ways you're able to contribute. You're able to give back. And that's the point, right? Yeah. Whether it's with money, time, energy, et cetera. You're still able to contribute and give back.
Yeah, and that's then I was going to go down that road too. I'm like, now you can do different things with giving back, right? And now it doesn't necessarily mean mission work specifically. It could be other things and other facets and tenets that can be able to support your overarching mission. So
you just wouldn't be able to do it with those nice shoes.
Yeah, exactly. So true. Birkenstocks are expensive. Off-brand Birkenstocks is what I'd be wearing.
Let's talk about your superpower. When I asked, what is your superpower in management? And you said communications. Yes. And they're like, no hesitation on that either, right?
It's so funny because I consider it a superpower, but I consider myself a student of communication at all times because everyone is so different. Mm. So while I might think I'm a good communicator one day, the next day I'm like, oh God, like that was a terrible conversation. They did not understand me. I didn't understand them. Why? So I consider it my superpower a little bit because I at least try to always analyze where the breakdown happened and take that into my next conversation so that the next time around I can meet those breakdowns and be like, okay, clearly this is how you handle communication. I handle it this way. Let's meet in the middle so we're not both at the end of the day. Because communication, if I could fix that, I tell my team this all the time, if I can fix it, I would be a millionaire. Like I would have so much money because I'd be so successful. Because it's just one of the biggest issues in all business. It's just people all the time crossing pathways and they don't understand each other and things go wrong and it's just a lot.
Analyzing the breakdowns, I think a lot of people miss that mark because they had this conversation and then they don't really go back and they don't replay that conversation. They take things out to be able to work on later. What's your process like to be able to analyze, break that down, and take those actionable steps for later?
Process. I don't know if I have an official process. I think I usually go home, and sometimes I beat myself up about it for a little bit. I'm like, gosh, like, why did that happen? Why did they hear me that way? I'm like, okay, like, they're not bad. I'm not bad. We're all on the same team. We're all for the same thing. Where was their headspace? And I try to think about what I know about my team members. So I've got a couple of different team members I work with, and they're all very different. I try to think about what their situation's like that day, who they are, who they've showed up as regularly. And then I try to figure out, like, how to pivot next time. So one of my team members, he's a very direct person. He prefers direct communication. And sometimes our issue is I'm not direct enough. I think I like dance around it sometimes a little bit. And I'm like, oh, next time I'm going to do this instead. And sometimes I'll even bring it up. I'll like the next day, I'll be like, hey, yesterday we had a communication issue. This was it. Let's figure it out for the future just so we can do better moving on.
I love that bring it up part. And I'm going to reference the Gottmans. That's actually something about marriage in relationships and couples. And it doesn't necessarily mean relations, but the 7 principles for making a marriage work is the book, or something along those lines. Uh-huh. And it's a phenomenal book. But one of the things that you just mentioned is bringing it back up and having a conversation with it. But there's an important thing that you also said in there. It's like, this is what happened. It's factual. It's not opinion-based, or not you always, right? Now you can have an honest conversation about the facts and the feelings with each other. And I think that's a powerful piece. How have your employees been in terms of receiving that sort of a conversation?
When I focus on the facts or what the end goal is for the greater good, they usually handle it really well. When I focus on maybe more of the emotions, sometimes they can be more defensive. So I have worked, doesn't always, we're all human, it's not perfect.
Right.
But I've worked very hard on focusing on like the reason I'm bringing this up is because I want us as a team to work better together. This is not me coming down on you. This is not you're a bad person. It's just want us to work well. I try to explain to them what I'm doing as I'm doing it so that they feel like they can let their guard down and they're not like, why is she bringing this up? What is she about to say? I don't want there to be surprises.
Right. Have you felt that part of that resistance might be the fact that in the, like family businesses, family dynamic and where you guys at in your revenue and where you're at, obviously there's a certain level of employees that you have, but being brought into a GM role, but being the owner's daughter, have you felt that there might be a little bit of a disconnect from some of your team with that? Or is this what you're talking about, this feelings, talking about it, help that?
I'm curious to see, because I'm in this in-between phase, currently my primary role before this was office manager. So I'm managing the office. So I'm stepping into now managing the management team. That's where I'm curious to see if that does happen, because I'm a little nervous it will. But if it does, we'll deal with it as it comes. I think a lot of it comes to do with my age. So I'm actually the youngest person in the office, and I manage the entire team. So sometimes I think it's more, I think sometimes for me, it comes across as my age. So I have to like, I talk to my dad about it. He's obviously my boss. And I'm like, I feel like it's my age and it's this. And he's always like encouraging me. He was like, just keep going. And even if they do judge you for your age, that's their problem. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. But I don't like it. So yeah.
That's a big thing. Like I've been in roles where I was 25 years old managing condo buildings and sitting around with a board of directors that are all 50, 60 years old and some younger ones. But when they see that you're young, like they don't want to take you serious, but it's the work. And when you show up, that's that ability for it. In working with the dad and working in this family dynamic and knowing that you're together as a family at work and then I'm like go your separate ways, but then when you get together with family events, how do you create a balance and a separation between family and work?
That's a great question. It's hard. It's how my dad and I connect a lot. It's definitely something that I try to watch, but I enjoy. We like to talk about business. We enjoy it. We connect about it. So my mom probably dislikes it more than anybody because him and I will be just talking about business strategies at like the dinner table. And she's just like, can you not? But she gets so annoyed. She's one of the founders. She's a CEO as well, but she's just not in the day to day. So some of it like doesn't make sense to her because she doesn't know all of it. But yeah, so I did tell my dad, I was like, when we hang out, like, I think we need to work on not talking about business. Let's talk about each other's lives. Like I try to ask my dad, what do you want to do? Because he's moving towards retirement, like semi-retirement. Yep. So I'm like, what are you going to do in your free time? Right. What do you want to do for fun? I'm excited for him. He's worked his butt off for this.
Right. And again, that gives the fosters in a connection, right? I was chatting with a friend a little while ago, and they don't have that connection with his dad. And all he wants is he yearns for that. But now you have something like that. And I think a lot of people need to recognize, but also be understanding and cognizant of the others in the relationship too. Your mom being like, okay, we probably shouldn't talk about business, right?
Yeah.
It's a constant yin and a yang, right? It's shit, Evan and I, right? We're business partners, right? When we get together, we start talking about some personal stuff and then we get to business, really, no, fuck, let's get back to personal, right? Yep.
To be intentional about it. One thing I'm curious on is this view of, is the team judging me because of my age? Yeah. Are they judging me because I'm the daughter of the owner stepping into this role? Has that allowed you to push through and to want to almost overachieve and do even better to try and earn that place versus it being handed it to you?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I didn't touch too much on the being the daughter, but I will say that was probably more of an issue when I was like 18, 19.
Right.
But then I went to school, came back, and there was like more of a disconnect between me and the team that I had spend a lot of time with.
Right.
So I was like, and also the way I got like my management position, it made sense at the time. Like I was the most qualified, regardless of me being the daughter.
Right.
But yeah, there is a level. It sometimes crosses my brain and I'm like, oh, like I get imposter syndrome and I'm like, I'm not like good for this. This is just because I'm the daughter. But then there's other days where I'm like, that communication is my superpower. Like right. I'm the person who finds the little like loops that no one wants to tie. I find the like breakdowns. I'm like, that needs to be talked to. And that has nothing to do with me being a daughter. That has everything to do with, that's just what I'm skilled at. So I try to remind myself of that when I feel that way. Cause I'm like, that's what I'm really good at. Let me like focus and hone in on that because I am his daughter and I love that. That's amazing. And I'm so thankful, but also I am really excellent at that. And that is really important in management. So that is like my thing, regardless of my position to the boss.
And it makes a lot of sense. And I think about Barty Heating and Cooling. When we had Adam Barty on it in Atlanta in AHR last year, he applied for their business is $40-50 million per year. Now he runs it, but he started in the warehouse sweeping the floors. Anytime a job opening came up, he had to apply and he had to go through the regular vetting process in order to be able to get the job. I don't think he ever didn't not get a job, but he worked his way up. And I think that's a big thing because now when you start there and you worked on that, and like that going away and then coming back is a powerful piece on it. Yeah. I want to touch on the imposter syndrome though.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have it, myself included. And it's a constant battle in here, right? Inside the mindset to be able to say, okay, how am I not an imposter? What sort of strategies and things and tactics do you self-tell yourself to help alleviate your imposter syndrome?
I saw this quote on Pinterest
says, self-tell yourself.
self-tell yourself.
It's been a long day.
That's fair. It's the best of it.
It's been a long day. I was like, what are you trying to laugh at here?
You tried to sound so smart.
It's okay.
I know.
It's all good. I'm not judging you.
Just lying, though.
It's okay. You can judge. I won't judge.
Fine, you know.
We'll just take that bit out. Right? No.
Oh no, we'll leave that in.
No, I know. You said you leave it all in. So I tell myself, Pinterest. Okay, so Pinterest. I love Pinterest. There's a lot of quotes on there, and there's just one that was like, you wouldn't have the opportunity if you weren't qualified. Mm. And I really do believe that a lot of opportunities come before us or come on our plate because they are something we're good at. There's something that we could grab a hold of. But I think the imposter syndrome, I read another article or quote about it, that it partly is because it's just out of reach, just a hair. And I think that bit is actually what makes me think that I should do it because it's, oh, the fact that it scares me or the fact that it just feels slightly out of reach means it's probably going to push me to be more successful, to be better, to grow. If it was super easy, and it was 100% my niche all the time, there is almost a level of I'm stagnant. What am I doing? So I was really upset at first when I was feeling this imposter syndrome. And it really came when I realized that I was going to be stepping into this GM role quicker than I thought. And I was like really upset about it. I was like, oh my God, like I felt so good. Like I have not felt imposter syndrome. I felt amazing in my position. And now all of a sudden I'm like, I don't know if I could do this. And then I like changed my mindset where it's, no, this is great for me. Because this is pushing me and this is growing me and this is making me better. And now I'm not stagnant. And I'm just going to grab a hold of it and just get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Mm. Amazing.
No, I was just going to say that being comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? Big thing.
No, it really is, right? And I mean, you grow a muscle by putting it under stress. You grow yourself by putting yourself under stress. There's distress and then there's eustress, which is the positive form of it. And it's incredibly important. I'm curious what the process is going to be like to announce this to the team and to have those communications.
I don't know. We'll find out.
Right? We'll make sure to release this episode after. But that's something that can be handled either really well or really poorly. And to get that buy-in from the team so that they buy into you as their leader, especially from the management staff that is seeing you as, yeah, your office manager, but now you're actually going to be the person I'm answering to. What are some of, because I think this is real talk now, what are some of the things that you're nervous about in that transition? And what are the things that you're most excited about?
Nervous, I think. What I was the most nervous, and now I'm still nervous about it, but not quite as nervous, is people going above me. Mm. So people already do that, given like the way the company is. It's a small company, and a lot of times you kind of feel like you have to go to other people to get answers. So sometimes people will go above me or to Greg when they could just go to me. And I'm like, okay, I'm a little nervous for that, but I'm prepped that I'm going to expect it's going to happen so that I'm not like frustrated and surprised. And I'm going to have a game plan. I haven't 100% given my game plan, but to myself or to my dad, like what happens, this happens. But we are implementing EOS, which is a business operating system. And our implementer, she said that in the transitionary period, there's going to be those little hiccups. There's going to be that funny stuff. And it's not necessarily personal.
Yep.
It's just people don't know what to do necessarily. They're learning. So I'm going to do my best not to take it personal. And I'm most excited, honestly, pay. It's going to be great. So I'm not mad about that. And then also, I've already been trying to do some of this stuff. I really like to be in charge. I do. I love grabbing hold of things and be like, let me take care of it. Let me delegate. Let me give you the information. Let me get, I've got your back. You do it. Let me just make sure you're doing it. So I've already been doing that. But now I get to do it to an extent where I'm empowered to do it. This is my job. So come to me. I've got you taken care of. Like, right. You don't got to worry about it.
And I love that. And that's a great lesson to anyone who is actually working for someone else, whether that's in a manager position, technician, et cetera, to see what it is that you want out of another position that might be above you and start to do some of those skills, yeah. Start to implement some of those things. But the reason I ask that question is because there's also a lot of contractors that listen to this podcast,
yeah.
A lot of owners, and they're promoting people, whether it's family or not. And there's a variety of emotions that come up when you make that promotion. And so it's important to understand what those could be and then have real conversations with them and also real conversations with the team to see how this is actually going to impact everything.
Yeah, and that's fair. Change is hard, yeah. And people can get really emotional around change. And it's not actually bad. It's right. Just people don't necessarily always know how to process that. But once you process it, you're usually fine. You just have to go through the fluctuation of it.
And it comes back to framing, right? How is it that you're framing that change? Mm-hmm. Does change have to be hard?
That's true. Yeah. All those are bad words. Difficult, painful.
And if that's what you associate to it, then yeah, it's probably going to be that because that's what you're focusing on.
That's true. I like that thought. I love change personally. It is a little hard though when you're not in control. Right. I typically am in control of the change. So I'm like, it's fine. But when it's not something you're in control of, it's a great way of reframing your brain. It doesn't have to be hard.
One, it doesn't have to be hard. Two, even if it is hard, does hard have to be negative?
That's true. It could be, like we were talking earlier, it can strengthen you. Yeah, grow the muscles of the emotional intelligence.
And I was thinking about that earlier, like EQ, right? Emotional mm-hmm. intelligence, and Travis Barbery, Emotional Intelligence 2.0, great book. Recommend that to anybody. It's enlightening because it actually shows you different things on how you used to interact with that. But the higher the EQ, generally the better manager you are.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. And so understanding that too with the emotional intelligence and going into that role is a big part. And looking back to EOS, you talked a little bit about the accountability and the accountability chart. And like we're in our EOS journey too. We've done our three sessions. We've done our vision day building too. And so we're really rolling it out on our leadership level and to our team leads and next to our departments. And all the team knows that's when they see this. What's EOS? Now they already know what it is. How have you found the accountability piece within EOS so far?
Okay, so we're at Vision Day Building 1. We just finished that. So we're about to go to Vision Day Building 2. So far, I personally like it. I think some of my team struggles with it, not because they don't like it, just because it's new. And I think even myself felt scared at first, because it's like when you're not used to being held accountable, the idea of it can feel a little like, what if I don't measure up? But because our team's putting it together as a management, like we're figuring out what the measuring tools are. So like we get to decide what it is that we're looking for. We have to make sure we're measuring up, and then we're gonna go to everybody else and make sure they're measuring up. So I personally think it's almost like actually a weight off of me, mm-hmm. because for a really long time, it's been me nitpicking all the little things and being like, oh my God, this is a problem, this is a problem, this is a problem. Now people know when they're falling short because we have it like written down, like this is what you're supposed to be doing, this is your rock, this is your expectation. They're not doing it. They know before our meetings, they're like, I wasn't doing it. And you're like, well, yeah, you weren't.
Right? It's that overall arching accountability, right? And you're able to do that and having each other be accountable to it. And I really like the part where we were able to, and with our director of operations, inside of our group, to be able to now have more honest, raw, real conversations at an owner and a leader's level, like the C-suite level, than I think we ever had in our business beforehand, because it's an issue. It gets put on there. We discuss it. We solve it. And it's just, that's, I think, the part that I think, and now we're starting to see this in our team leads coming up with issues. And as they're starting to get used to it, it just takes a little bit of time to really get fully adapted into the entrepreneur's operating system.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know what EOS is, again, go read the book Traction. It's a great resource. You can look up EOS, the Entrepreneur's Operating System, online on YouTube. Tons of videos on that. Or you can listen to our podcast that we did with Michelle and Ryan Tutak as well. where we went in depth on both of those and how they apply to a home service business.
There you go. That was like a readout right there. In looking at Vision A1, because you do core values, right? Did you guys have core values beforehand?
We did, yeah.
And then after Vision Day One, were your core values more or less the same as the original core values?
So we're in the middle. I'm in the middle of writing them, like the spiel for them. They are similar, yeah, but they're not 100% the same. And I think it's going to be interesting at VB2 to figure out if we actually want to keep them or not. Because mm-hmm. since VB1, I've witnessed some core value issues in our team. So I'm like, is that a core value? Yes and no.
No, I was fascinated by that because like ours were... more or less the same, just different wording to clean it up, which was more powerful for us. And it's how can you take the core values home? And like we had on our previous show with Greg with Platinum Plumbing, we talked a little bit about this concept about, okay, the people, product, price, and your people are actually your most important part of the business and your organization. But how can you impact them going home? Your core values should align with how they can take that home.
People are so important. If there's one thing I'm walking away from this conference, it's people. It's got made it on my notes list like 8 times. It's like people and with exclamation points. Yeah. All of the sessions, every single session, they talk about people and people. And what was the other one? I'm like going blank on it now, but it's people. Like, oh, connection. There we go. Right. That's the word I'm thinking of. Yeah, people and connection.
How crazy was that, Matt? The 9347, the song that like,
fuck.
Oh
my God, I didn't trust him. I looked it up online.
Oh, so did I. I did too. I asked him like, hey, because I don't have serve. Like, hey, Google, how many days has it been since whatever? And like, the fuck?
Yeah, I thought he was lying. I was like, there's no way.
There's no way. But hey, do you know what? Manipulation, right? In its finest form. So in a good way, in a fun way. And so it's just influencing. There we go. Jordan, I know, we probably keep going, but of course, obviously being respectful of the event, it's an open bar in there. That's truthfully where my heart lies. The open bar all night long. But as we do wrap up, first off, thank you for taking the time to come and chat with us. And thanks to Michelle for setting it up too, Michelle Myers. But thank you for coming and taking the time to chat with our podcast. Sorry, it's a little kid who's walking and almost took out Evan's computer. I don't know, I just love toddlers learning how to walk. Oh yeah, it was a solid save. But as we wrap up, we have one final question here for you, Jordan. What is one question that you wish people would ask you more, but don't?
What are your intentions behind what it is that you're asking from me? I wish people asked that more. Yeah, because sometimes I try to share my intention ahead of time, but it doesn't always come across right. And sometimes it gets misinterpreted or people assume. So I just wish people asked that before they move forward with however it was that they decided to make their decision.
That goes back to that facts that we talked about, right? And having that honest conversation with facts and emotions behind it.
Take the emotions out, lead with facts. Love it.
Yes, facts. We love those.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And until next time, cheers.
It was in my hand. There we go. Cheers.
Well, that's a wrap on another episode of HVAC Success Secrets Revealed. Before you go, two quick things. First off, join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/HVAC Revealed. The other thing, if you took one tiny bit of information out of this show, no matter how big, no matter how small, all we ask is for you to introduce this to one person in your contacts list. That's it. That's all. One person. So they too can unleash the ultimate HVAC business. Until next time, cheers.